Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward.
Welcome back to Season 2, Episode 6 of Excelsior Journeys Behind the Scenes, part of the National Podcast Post-Month Challenge. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. For those of you who are not familiar with the National Podcast Post-Month Challenge, it's real simple. The object of the game is to have 30 completed, edited, and posted episodes of a podcast from November 1st to November 30th. If you're able to do one per day, fantastic. As long as you have 30 episodes completed by November 30th, you'll have completed the challenge. I've done this several times already, and I'm having a blast doing this. This is my sixth time doing this challenge, and this time it's all about my history in writing for the stage and big and small screen. For this episode, I am going to be going into part three of a very critical time in my life. I was a junior in high school at Godwin High School in Henrico County, Virginia, in Richmond. And I was invited by a classmate and a friend, Brandy Hurt, to join the writing staff of the junior class variety show. And the goal for the junior class variety show is to fund the senior prom. So it was a real sense of duty to put on the best show possible so that the seniors would get the best send-off possible. Per my advice to focus on all of television as a major theme for the show, we created Primetime at Godwin. By the time we get to this part of the story, I have already gotten on stage for the first time since I was in sixth grade in Poughkeepsie, New York. And I finally got over that period of stage fright that had me mentally, spiritually, and emotionally crippled. I didn't feel like myself. And getting back on that stage, and not only getting back on the stage, but I was performing something that I had written. I was able to write my parody of the Hair Club for Men commercial called The Bald Be Gone Do-It-Yourself Kit. I brought in my friend Frank Lamb to be my test subject, put a bald cap on him, a shower cap, and basically stuck a piece of carpet sample on his head using masking tape, and then had a staple gun. Now, for the dress rehearsal, which was the first time I'd gotten on stage since 1988, I was using a regular stapler. So it looked like it was what I was going to do, but we didn't have the staple gun itself handy. So I knew I just needed to get this across. And by showing the stapler, got a good laugh. There was a good amount of people at that dress rehearsal, and it got a really good, hearty laugh that gave me a good charge, knowing I was on the right path to perform the very next night. And the next night was opening night. So the funny part of all this was that my father was coming into town. He knew that I was a writer on this show, and he knew that something I had written had gotten into the show, but he had no idea that I was going to be on stage performing it. He knew that I had stepped away from being on stage and was focusing more on writing. This was going to be a lot of fun. Knowing that he was going to be there, he was going to enjoy it, and we got to do it. And he was going to see me doing it, and that really got me excited. What was really cool was before everything happened, while we were getting everything ready, one of my other friends had just the loudest plaid blazer you've ever seen. And I tried it on and it fit perfectly. And I was so happy. I was just like, oh, this is perfect. This is exactly what I wanted to go with this. And then I reached out to one of the band members that were down in the orchestra pit. And I said to Chris Bowman, and he was at the keyboard. I said to him, I need, like, when I hold up the briefcase to show the Bald Be Gone Do-It-Yourself kit, I need some really cheesy sounding trumpets. Do you have something like that? And he played it for me. I was just like, that's it. So as soon as I hold it up and I announce the Bald Be Gone do-it-yourself kit, go ahead and use that. I got up on stage, got out there, and as an added bonus, this was the thing that really brought everything home. Someone had an actual staple gun. And to appease Frank's fear, I completely took out the cartridge that held the staples in place. So that was completely empty. And I let him see it over and over again. I even pulled the trigger on it several times so that he knew there would be no staple coming out. I was able to put his mind at ease. And I got out there and it just felt like, as I'm stepping out there, it's the first time I'm really seeing that place is packed. It was absolutely packed, sold out, standing room only. And it was something that I had worked on. I created the concept and here it is. I'm about to perform something that I wrote for this many people. And I just felt like the energy just shot up me. It was like I was on a drug. I went through it and I got them all set. I yelled out the Bald Be Gone do-it-yourself kit. Sure enough, Chris just burr, 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 cheesiest trumpets you've ever heard. It was perfect. I had Frank sit down. I brought out next, hold up your choose, to grab your choice of hair. And I held up the hair, got a good laugh. And then I said, now use the exclusive Bald Be Gone hair applicator. And I held up the staple gun. And there was this roar of laughter from the crowd. Absolute roar. I was taken aback for a few seconds. I was like, wow. I felt like I was back before the dress rehearsal. This time around, it's hard to explain. But it was that moment. I remember hearing Robert Englund said something similar to this when he was doing regional theater. He was playing Pinocchio, running back and forth on the stage and having these arrows stuck to him. And he kept on adding more. And it was getting a bigger laugh and a bigger laugh as he kept going. And he said, that laugh was mine. And that's exactly how I felt when I held up that staple gun. That laugh, that eruption of laughter, that was mine. No matter what happened the rest of the night, no one has taken that away from me. And to this day, no one has. And I slapped the hair on Frank's head, did the, pull the trigger. He freaked out. And I finished up the whole skit, grabbed my briefcase, all my stuff, said operators are standing by, click, and walk backstage. Huge round of applause. And then the show went on to the end of the first act. I don't remember my feet touching the ground from then on. I was elated. I was like, oh my God, I have missed this. This is what I needed and truly needed. I remember coming out during intermission, going to see my parents. And my dad just starts cracking up. He goes, you son of a bitch. Gives me a big hug. He was not expecting to see me there performing. There I was not only performing, but performing something I had written. And it killed. It got over in such a big way. And I'll never forget that. You want to talk about something that was truly invigorating. That was it. And I really hoped that feeling would continue on. And that I would get that sort of confidence in myself and that would sustain itself for a longer period of time. It was fantastic on opening night. And it was fantastic again later on the next week when we had our second show. And we had huge attendance numbers. From what I understand, we delivered one hell of a good senior prom for the seniors. The funny thing is, after everything, after the dust had cleared, after we got the numbers, we were told that we had created the most successful junior class variety show in Godwin High School history. That was the last time you've ever heard that I had anything to do with it because I was listed as a writer on the show and there was my sketch and everything. But after the shows were done and the dust had cleared, it was like I was never a part of it. that was definitely kind of disappointing. I was expecting at least some sort of recognition the next year when our yearbooks came out, just to get like something, like a shot or something from the performance or a nod in the text about what I had done, about how I was able to contribute, but nothing. So that definitely kind of stung a little bit. I was kind of hoping that it would have been nice to have gotten that kind of credit, but that's what happens in school. It wound up doing a lot of good for me in the long term because it wound up really propelling me back on the stage. It was the next year when I was a senior in high school. That's when I auditioned to be in the fall play, Greater Tuna. I wound up auditioning with a guy named Scott Nogi, who was a freshman. Turns out we had really good chemistry working together, and we wound up getting those roles that we auditioned for, and they were the two lead roles. And then I would also play two other roles. I would play a minister and I would play a sheriff. And I got to have fun just being that kind of character and everything, just trying all different things with them and making each one their own. And it was a blast. I had so much fun doing that. And then later on, I would keep doing stuff for my Drama 3 class, and I would audition to be in the Marymount Manhattan College theater program, and I would get in. And then as a true, something that I really appreciated, and this is during the time that I still felt a little stung by the fact that there was no real recognition for my contributions on the show the year before, but the senior class reached out to me and asked me to be in the senior sketch for that year's junior class variety show. That was truly a wonderful nod right there. That to me was just like, you know, your contributions were not forgotten. And so we want to make sure that you have this role. It was a take on Dirty Dancing. We were recreating the last part of the movie. I was asked to be Mr. Kellerman. And I had a blast with that. I had so much fun because I got to slap on the lisp that he has and really play that up. So I got to come out right at the end like, so let's join in just one last chorus, you know, that whole part. And it was a lot of fun. And it was something that I really appreciated. It's definitely something that I needed because, again, it was that feeling of no matter what I did or tried to do, it just didn't hit as hard. Even earlier in that same year, doing those three roles in Greater Tuna, one of them being the lead, very little recognition happened after that. I was trying to keep that confidence in myself going, but I also felt like no matter what I was doing, it wasn't connecting with anyone. So it was just like, it was this interesting little conundrum that I was dealing with. But thankfully, the right people were still watching, and I was just too dumb to realize that. So, you know, like I was spending way too much time trying to feel like I needed to be given this certain amount of credit. Turns out I was getting it all along because the senior class invited me to be a part of the senior sketch. At the end of the year, my drama teacher, Mr. Dameron, gave me the Outstanding Achievement in Drama Award, the faculty medallion. Because for seniors, every class was recognized for different things, but the seniors got medals instead of a regular certificate. And so I got a medal. I was not only inducted into the International Thespian Society that same year, so I got to wear the thespian cords for my graduation, but then I got the medal from drama to go that to wear as well. So there was a lot that I was that there was it was senior year was very interesting, you can say. I feel like I'm definitely going all over the place with this episode, but it all happened because Brandy Hurt had asked me to be a part of the writing staff for the junior class variety show. If that doesn't happen, I don't know what happens to me after that. I don't know if I feel that same sort of courage to get up on stage and perform for people, which leads me to performing in college as a member of the BA theater group. I don't know what happens with any of this stuff, but thankfully, I don't have to dwell on that because she took the initiative. She reached out because of the characters that I was drawing and writing about. She saw that. She liked what she read and reached out. That's something that I will never, ever forget. I will always be grateful to her for that. Little did I know that those characters would come to my rescue again in my senior year of high school. And I am really excited to be telling that story. But I'll be telling it in the next episode. I want to thank you guys for listening to this 3-episode arc that really kind of catapulted me into doing the stuff that I'll be talking about later on. So until the next episode, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to heesgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to George@heesgotit.com.